you have somehow ended up listening to The Stuff That's Real, That You Didn't Know Was Real, But Also Is Cool podcast. Or Sturti Dickwer Bayek. Or, never mind.
Good morning, or afternoon, or night, depending on where you are in the world. It's morning for me, so I'm going to assume it's morning, and we're just going to pretend like it is for everybody listening. Welcome back to the show. Once again, I'm your gracious and loving host, Mr. Nick Thacker, and I'm here with my other, possibly more gracious, certainly more loving, maybe not as much of a co-host, Kevin Tomlinson. I can't give you three compliments in a row. I've got to temper it. People lose their minds. But how are you doing, Mr.?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm feeling co-hosty today. So we'll run with it. We're in interesting times right now. So we got lots of interesting topics that are sort of evolving as we go.
Well, I don't think we're ever going to run out of topics.
Is it?
Segway. I don't know. All right. It could be a segue for mine, I'm sure. But I want to hear what this is. I'm not going to give it away. I'll let you lead us into it. But I want to hear what this is about. This is interesting.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, I'll open up. So what I'm bringing to the table today is a theory called phantom time hypothesis. This is really interesting to me, and I actually heard about it quite a while back, and it's intriguing, but the general hypothesis is that we are not actually living in the year 2022, that in fact, we're off by about 297 years, I think is the total, and the idea here is that way back in right now, actually, they're claiming that the year is actually 1722 instead of 1720. So this hypothesis came around in 1991 with a German historian named, I'm going to see if I can do this, Herbert Illig. Illig is probably it. All right. So Illig proposed that basically back in like the 700s, I'm trying to find the exact date. So, 900. So in 996, okay. So basically the idea is that back when the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III and Pope Sylvester II and the Byzantine Emperor Constantine VII all got together and decided that it would be much cooler if Emperor Otto was ruling in the year 1000 instead of 996 AD. So they changed the date so that he could be ruling on an even number millennial year. And then things kind of progressed from there. So there was another, let's see, Illig further claims, I'm going to read this part because this kind of helps summarize it. So Illig further claims that the trio altered existing documents and created fraudulent historical events and people in order to back themselves up. He claims that the Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne was not, in fact, a real ruler, but simply a King Arthur-type legend. He explains that through all of this tampering and forgery, an extra 297 years were added to history. And he goes on, and this article is really kind of fascinating. It's sort of a deep dive into the whole thing. But you know, we're talking about, this is a conspiracy on a massive and historic scale. Like you've got forged documents, fake lives, fake emperors. So basically the Middle Ages, according to this theory, did not exist except on paper. And what's interesting to me, by the way, is that right now, there's a woman on Instagram, which is always, TikTok, always a great source of information. She's a historian, she claims, but she's claiming that the Roman Empire, that Rome itself never existed. Like the whole Roman Empire never existed. And it's the sort of idea. She's saying that it was made up by the Spanish Inquisition as a means of controlling people, and that she, as support for these claims, she states things like, what's the Roman language? There's no Roman. There's no documents written in Roman. Everything's written in Greek or Latin or whatever. And most Roman architecture is Greek architecture, and there's a lot of Greek written on the walls of these places, and documents from the era are not directly attributable to anyone that we can historically verify. So she's got this whole elaborate theory. She's kind of an ass about it, frankly. But
as one would have to be to deny the existence of the entire Roman Empire.
You would have to be. But when you find out that there's a potential with actual legitimate historical evidence to support it, that we're 297 years off from what year we think it is, conspiracy theories like hers start to take on a little more credibility. So there's a sort of interesting dynamic at play here that the history we think we know isn't real. That's kind of a given these days. But the fact that there are actual, you know, there's theories, hypotheses that are slowly finding support in the historical and scientific community that could back this up. That's what's truly interesting to me.
So. Yeah, no, definitely interesting. There's a couple things about it. First of all, I'm interested about Illig's claim about Charlemagne not being, in fact, a real ruler. I don't know much about Charlemagne, to be fair, other than I assumed he was real. So I'd be really interested. I'm going to dig into that part of it because I'm interested to see how he just says that. And then, you know, do we have his bones somewhere? Because that would be one way of saying, yeah, this was a guy that we all agree is called Charlemagne, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the second part of it,
by the way, for the record, I don't necessarily believe this stuff, and I haven't done anything to vet any of this. So don't take this as definitive, but it's an interesting theory, and I'd love to kind of look into it a little further.
But you are supposed to be telling us things that are real.
This is real. The conspiracy is real.
Conspiracy is real.
And it's not even, even know, it's not a conspiracy, it's a hypothesis. A real hypothesis. Now, what I haven't done is go verify that hypothesis is real or is in fact a theory proven. But of course, I don't think anyone has, you know, maybe there's evidence that disproves this, you know? So that's all I'm saying. Don't take this is absolute proven fact. It's not absolute proven fact because it is in fact a hypothesis, which is the definition of hypothesis. So
that's fair. That's fair. Well, the second thing that I was going to point out here is I am really interested in hearing more things like this, where you've got a group of old white guys, because it's always old white guys in Western history, right? History books are written by the victor. White guys have been the victor for a lot of things. It's these old white guys that get together and just decide things. And this is how we decided what books were going to be canonized in the Bible. Although I was told yesterday that Augustine was a black guy. I didn't know that. But the point is, like, this is how we agree that things become canonical in the Bible. We get a bunch of old white guys in a room and we decide. We just say, this is accurate and this is not. And there's, you know, the optimist in me says, well, there's probably some factual information that these guys are using to quantify and qualify certain documents and not others. But they don't necessarily have to, because no one's arguing with them back then. They're just going to come out and say, this is the Bible. This is all the stuff that God said, and all the other stuff is not what God said. Yeah. And so I just find this kind of stuff interesting because it's the same sort of deal. It's these guys that get together and they're like, hey, world, Charlemagne didn't exist, and we're actually going to just jump forward 297 years. And everyone's like, I just want to eat like some bread today. Like, I don't literally care about any of this crap that you guys are talking about. And so they just goes unchecked for millennia, right? And we end up finding, well, there could be a thing, there could be something that happened, there could be some kind of falsification going on, and now we have to dig in and find out. I think it's cool. I think it's fascinating in a lot of ways why they're motivated to do this, but I also find it strangely believable because the situation, you know, it's like nobody cares. No real people, you know, no real normal humans are going to really care about this because they're trying to survive. You know, this is the Middle Ages.
Well, and think about the overall implications of this that we'd have to deal with as a reality. For example, carbon dating would be off by at least 297 years, right? So if you're using carbon dating to, say, verify a document, how many documents have been verified as fake that happened within that span of 297 years, right?
That's true, yeah.
So it throws off our historical record. It can actually alter some of the outcomes of some of our scientific hypotheses. Like, some of the things that science has proclaimed are time dependent. So if you are looking at this from a broader perspective, you know, having a gap of 297 years of missing time has profound consequences across the board, or can.
So, it can, yeah.
This, yeah. Which opens up lots of thriller
plots. I was going to say, lots of ideas here. There's lots of things coming out. I'm thinking of an historical thriller about the Crusades, where it was all just, you know, a misunderstanding of time, essentially.
Propaganda.
Could have led to a lot of things happening. You know, one thing led to another, which we're not allowed to do in writing. We can't say that. By the way, this is writing advice. Don't say one thing led to another. Don't say sure enough either, because that's lame. When an author goes, one thing led to another, and I'm like, you're supposed to tell me what the things are that led to another.
That's the whole point of your existence.
That's your job right now.
That's your job, man.
One thing led to another, and they caught the villain.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, don't do that. Oh, that's funny. I've got one for you, man. This is really interesting. I couldn't do it. I was trying to make a nice segue into this from yours, but I just can't do it. Meanwhile, in Brazil, how about that? There lives a dastardly little fellow called the bullet ant. And these guys, these are a lot of fun. You've heard of these, I'm sure. Everyone is kind of, this has been popularized as this really terrifying little insect. And it turns out it's just a nice, lovely little ant. Not little, actually. Yeah. He's like an inch long. It's the biggest ant,
I think. It's pretty big.
Pretty big. But it's supposedly the most painful sting of any insect on the planet. You get stung by this thing, you're going to feel it. You're going to know. It's, where did the article go? I lost it. I was going to read the actual Latin name of the thing, but I can't find it anymore. The point is,
Paraponera clavata.
There it is. Did I already give it to you? Yeah, I must have.
You didn't give it to me.
Okay, well, you found it. Paraponera clavata. It's a tropical rainforest ant. So it lives down there in the Amazon, that whole basin. You know, it's pretty, you know, so the things in the Amazon, this is kind of an aside, but I love the Amazon because there's so much crap there that we just don't understand. So much stuff happening that we don't know. The fact of the matter is that a lot of things grow much larger there. I don't know, there's actual science. There must be something about the oxygen levels being higher or something, but that's where you've got the centipedes that are like 2 feet long, you know, that suck your brain out. And that's not true, but that's in my nightmares. I hate centipedes. You got these bullet ants that are an inch long and their sting is, you know, so dang. It's like, geez, this is an entire world down there created for everything to kill everything else on steroids. It's just, it's just jacked up to an nth degree. And the bullet ant is no exception. Apparently, it's the most painful sting known to man, any insect. It's also known as the 24-hour ant, the conga ant. I wonder if it's because it's in Conga. I wonder if it's over. No, that's Congo. Never mind. Conga ant. Okay. Never mind. Wrong continent. The lesser giant hunting ant. That just sounds like a scientist being a jerk. Yeah, they look like ants. You know, they're reddish black ants. They got really large pinchers, and you can see the stinger all the time on these things. I don't think it goes into its abdomen. But these guys live for about 90 days. They live in Central South America. Conservation status, that's nice. So we are not concerned about these things. They're doing just fine. They do not need our help in any way. They're living the dream down there, stinging people. But you may have heard of this in relation to this tribe, the Mare tribe, I think is the name of them. Mm-hmm. There's an indigenous tribe that lives down there and uses this bullet ant as a sort of indoctrination ritual. Right? The Mawe, not the Mare, the Mawe, the Satere Mawe people of Brazil. It's like a rite of passage for them. So the boys, specifically the ones who want to become warriors, or maybe everyone does, I don't know. They gather these ants and they sedate them. They just put them in this herbal liquid or something and they fall asleep. And then they weave these gloves made out of palm leaves. Really cool, intricate looking things too. They're really nice gloves, huge gloves. Like oven mitts. Yeah. And they weave the ants into the oven mitts with the stingers in the inside, pointing into the inside of the glove. And then they wake up the ants and they shove a kid's hand in there. And that's it. The kid's got to wear them like 5 to 10 minutes. And apparently they got to do this like 20 times before they're considered to be a full-on Mawe warrior. Yeah. That's the ritual. So they get stung and they take their hand out and it's like swollen, completely numb. They can't feel it. And apparently that's their ritual. That's what they do. If you can leave it on for 5 to 10 minutes, then you get to become a warrior if you do that same thing like 20 times over the next several months. Just crazy to me. And it's almost like they're trying to build up some immunity to this. But as it turns out, the neurotoxin that these ants release is not dangerous at all. Like it's a neurotoxin, so it'll paralyze that area, like a local anesthetic almost, but you will feel it. But then it completely works out of your system in 24 hours. So it's kind of cool. There's no trace of this stuff after about a day. You stick your hand in the oven mitt and you are in agony for literally a day. And then you are done and you're totally fine. And apparently there's no trace of it except you feel like you're like on a high. You're on some like adrenaline high. There was another article I read. I can't remember the guy's name, but I think his job, like he goes around the world and gets stung by shit for fun and then writes about it. Like that's he's a stingy and that's his job. He's an entomologist.
Entomologist, yeah.
Entomologist, I guess. Studies bugs, right? Yeah. He goes around and he looks for these little guys and he gets stung by them. And he did confirm that it is extremely painful, one of the worst pains he'd ever felt. Certainly the worst pain from a little bug. But he also said, I think his quote was, I felt after a day, after it wore off, I felt like my adrenaline was pumping so high, if I jumped off a cliff, I could fly. Now, thankfully, he didn't do that. And he didn't learn that he could not fly. He's still on the ground, on Earth, safely getting stung as a stingy all around the world for us, for our entertainment, for our information and knowledge.
Yeah.
What do you think about these little guys, man? Would you do it? If you got to be initiated into this warrior tribe, would you stick your hand in that glove?
Yeah, I probably would. I mean, I imagine I'd regret it, you know, almost instantly and for the next 24 hours or so. But yeah, I would do it. What's interesting, you know, so I have like a severe allergy to ant venom anyway. Fire ants, you know, I get blistered welts and things like that. I think a lot of people do, but I mean, for some reason, they impact me pretty big, but I'd still do it.
That's interesting to me because I was reading another article too about these guys and the science, they're saying that these, unlike other things like fire ants and other types of ants, there's almost no immune response. There's no histamine response to these guys. There's just no allergen there. And I'm sure there's always an exception. That's why they said most and not all. But I'd be really curious. Yeah. I kind of want to go down to Amazon with you and stick your hand in
the glove. Watch me suffer? Sure, yeah.
Walk around and see if I find one of these Maui people and say, hey, you got one of them oven mitts so I can shove this guy's hand into?
Yeah.
I just want to see something.
I sort of did this by accident when I was a kid because I was staying with my uncle. And while everyone else was off kind of doing their thing, I was riding my cousin's bike. And for some reason, I don't know why, decided I would stop on the sidewalk and lay down at the edge of the sidewalk for some reason. And then a moment later, I felt the first sting and I realized I had laid down in an ant bed and was covered with fire ants over most of my body at that point. So I've been through that. I've done the rite of passage, but I'd do it again on my hands. That's fine.
Yeah. You'd be an Amazonian warrior.
You know, a lot of these tribes, what you find out, what's interesting about the Amazon, and I think you're right about the level of oxygen because it is, you know, with the Amazon forest there, it's one of the places on Earth where the, you know, concentration of oxygen is going to be the highest.
What do they call it, like the lungs of the Earth or something?
That's what they say.
I am they.
They say this. But we find the reason the Amazon is so vital to us in the modern age is because we're constantly coming across things that nature has constructed that solve certain issues in the modern world, health issues, things like that. I mean, people are convinced we'll find the cure for cancer in the Amazon if we don't burn it all down first.
I'm not convinced. We haven't already found it.
I'm with you.
Knowing what I know about American pharmaceutical companies,
yeah,
I bet it's out there already.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a Pfizer vial somewhere full of 100% cancer prevention. But what's interesting to me about stories like this and the, you know, these tribes use these ants, and we've actually seen stories like, again, the first thing that pops in my head is Amazonia from James Rowland's. But the idea that, you know, sometimes these tribes will do this stuff and there's a medicinal purpose to it that's sort of a side benefit of it. So it's like a rite of passage and sounds arcane and painful and terrible. But, you know, this kid is now immune to half the toxins in the rainforest or something. There's little things like that that happen all the time. This is how, by the way, we discovered things like aspirin, tobacco, all these things that are now sort of part of the common lexicon of products are all naturally derived. Most of them came from the rainforest and were used by, you know, indigenous people there for a variety of purposes, some of which we would think of as just hokum, you know, like it's just mythology and voodoo. But the reality is some of that stuff, you know, we haven't explored all of it. You know,
so, and what do you always say, man? You said on the show like numerous times that the mythology and folklore is often spread so widely and repeated so often because it's based or at least rooted in truth. You know, that I'm recalling the Civil War episode. Well, we didn't do an episode about the Civil War, but because that was real, and we all know. But
the angel or
the whatever it is.
Yeah,
I was just listening to that. People are glowing because their wounds are getting filled with this bacteria. And it was discovered by some 17-year-old kid, like 200 years after.
Yeah.
Everyone had just dismissed it as this, well, yeah, but Civil War, people are crazy back then, you know, whatever. They were all high or drunk or something. And while that was probably true, there was a lot of truth to this thing. So much so, in fact, that it's 100% true that these people would glow because of this glow-in-the-dark bacteria that would crawl into their open wounds and frankly keep them alive because of it, because of the warmth allowing the bacteria to survive and then cleaning the wound that the bacteria did. Because it was this mutually beneficial thing. Just crazy to me. And that's how I feel about a lot of the stuff in the Amazon. Like these guys, we probably, the Mawe people, and I don't know anything about them. Somebody probably does. But I would be willing to bet that we know far less about them than we do about Germans. You know, or people from Africa. Like there's this different civilizations that we've studied around the world. And this is not one of them. And so I bet there's a reason these Mawe people did this a long time ago. Like they were allergic to these bullets. And they've been doing it for thousands of years where they've just been developing an immune response to these things because they needed that in order to hunt. I bet there's just a simple explanation for that. And then over time, for whatever reason, two different and divergent evolution structures, the neurotoxin was inert, essentially, in humans, became inert. I don't know. I just find all that fascinating. I feel like we're never going to know. You know, I feel like we're never going to have a definitive answer for that and many other mythology and folklore and legend type things.
The question marks surrounding stories like this, when you discover things like this exist, that's fertile ground for storytelling because we won't ever know for sure. But most people haven't heard of bullet ants or the concept of putting on a pair of, you know, oven mitts made of palm leaves and ants stinging you. That's something very foreign and but intriguing to people. It's like, what is the purpose? You know, you can call it an initiation rite, but that's Western science anthropologists looking at this group and this practice and interpreting what they're being told from outside of the culture. We don't know what really started all that. So there could be other benefits to it that have been lost to time or that they're not willing to share. You know, that's the interesting thing about anthropology is why I'm so interested in anthropology. Once you start looking at these various cultures, they're not always truthful with you. Like they don't always share. We have this sort of impression that these guys are going out in their pith helmets and, you know, they're bringing our modern 1700s age to, that's a callback, to the noble savage, which, you know, was blatantly racist idea to begin with. But
right.
We have that vision still to this day. But the reality is that, you know, let's say aliens landed on Earth today and began communicating with us and studying us, and we found their presence benign enough that we communicate with them, but we would never share with them all our secrets. They would never learn everything that we know because it's dangerous to share information. That's what we learn as humans and have learned throughout the millennia. So we don't know for sure why they do what they do.
Okay, so as an author, I'll go first because I was thinking of this. This is kind of an interesting, I think it could be a truth serum. If I were to write another book like Amazon Code, I might use something like the bullet ants neurotoxin as a truth serum. You know, they get people injected with this stuff and sure, it's painful, but you know, they may use it as a way to get people to talk. And then, you know, the high that they feel afterwards is just that the release of that. It's like this, I feel so good. I'll tell you anything, you know? And it's proof is in that high that you feel, the adrenaline rush you get afterwards after you come down off the pain. So maybe there's some lab that's cooked up a way to essentially get people to take this in like a pill form so it doesn't actually cause any pain. It doesn't get into your epidermis. You know, it just goes straight into your gut and into your bloodstream and you start spilling secrets. And they know this. And so they've imprisoned the Mawe people in this area and using them to harvest these guys or something like that. I don't know. Kind of going off on a tangent, but that's the whole point. Come up with anything?
If Dan Kotler encountered these people doing this, I think that the angle I would take is this is a sort of temporary inoculation against something else that these people have incorporated into their sort of religious practices or something, you know, something along those lines. So I think the tack I would take is they put these gloves on these kids. That looks like the initiation to the Westerners. But for the next couple of days, they're recovering from this, right? And it's a mild paralytic, apparently. It's also a hallucinogenic or it has some sort of euphoric impact. So what if the idea is you go through this process, you get the stings, and then you're guided into another area where you would maybe have to say, let's just say it's something like, you know, in this area, there are these vipers and you have to pass through the vipers to get to an herb, and the herb is something that's useful to the tribe in some way. Maybe it's got health benefits or whatever, but only the young could survive this, and only if they've been inoculated with the bullet ant venom. So I would go a route like that. So, you know, if I had Kotler encounter this, it would be like, in order to save Agent Denzel's life, we need this herb, but he has to go through the initiation rites and go into this pit of vipers to retrieve the herb.
Yeah, I like going the tack of there's some kind of natural, and in my books, it would absolutely be some terrifying predator, like a gigantic titanoboa, you know, anaconda style prehistoric snake. You know, this is like,
what if it's giant versions of the ants?
Or instead of a viper. Giant bird. There you go. That's kind of a cool. Yeah. Like, okay. So yeah, I would go something like that, like where they have to do that. They don't even know why they've been doing this ritual, you know, but you become a teenager and it turns out that there's a lot of science in there that they found out many, 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 many thousands of years ago or whatever, that how long they've been living there, where by the time you're 12 to 14 years old, your blood is your adult blood in some sense, or your body is your adult body in some sense that your blood can handle getting infused with this bullet ant stuff, but you have to do it, you know, 20 times over the next 6 months while you mature. And then you exude this, you know, aura, and like oleic acid kind of thing, where the other bullet ants know not to mess with you.
Right. Well, yeah, I was going to say, what if it's camouflage? You know, we've got a lot of evidence that supports that ants in particular communicate via pheromones. So let's say that all these bullet ants inject you with this venom, and now you can pass through, you know, this underground cavern filled with giant ants who just see you as one of them.
Yeah, they think you're just another ant. Yeah. Or something.
And if you were to enter that otherwise, they'd attack and kill you. But as long as you are exuding this pheromone, you know, you're going to have to monkey paw it with your useless hands when you get to whatever it is you need to get. But maybe they supply you with something like, you know, here is the sacred claw that we attach to your forearm.
And when, and since these ants are otherwise docile, like they don't really eat human, they don't really stab humans to kill them, but they will attack, you know, they'll stab you. You won't die from that. What you'll die from if you go in this cavern is they will paralyze you by stabbing you in the abdomen, and then you will literally melt in the acid that they put out, and that's how they eat you.
Or your lungs shut down.
Like,
there's all kinds of ways you can die from venom.
Right. But I'm saying the venom that kills you, it's the fact that they just paralyze you and you can't get away while they squirt you with their oleic acid that melts you so that they can basically just drink you in human smoothie form.
There you go.
And then, you know, the guy stumbles across this, and there's like an old Roman like legion or something. The remains.
See, that would be really
how you do it. That'd be like the prologue, right? Yeah. Like
you've got, you know, Kotler or Harvey Bennett or somebody goes into this network of tunnels that are basically a giant ant bed under the Maui people's home, and they start seeing like conquistadors and, you know, or signs of, like, you know, armor that's
helmets
been
and shields.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Leftovers from people who tried to enter to take what wasn't theirs without going through the ritual. So,
and then the bad guy organization, they don't know any of that part, but they know that this stuff is like a truth serum. So they're trying to open these tunnels again to get at what they think is the remains of these ants. What they don't know is they're just going to basically open a portal, and all these ants, these giant human-sized ants, are going to come marching out and terrorize like Peru or something.
Yeah.
Now I got to go write this.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we'll be back.
Unfortunate. I've already written this book while we were talking.
Oh, dang it! Oh man.
So, as I am wont to do. No, see, that's cool. And if you work in the Phantom Time idea, then now you've got some interesting.
Ooh, there you go. The history. I like.
I don't want to artificially connect those two like disparate ideas. In a sense, I do, but I think it's sort of going too far. Like, you know, the idea of there may be a culture that depends on these ants in this ritual in order to, you know, get to something that's the treasure, the MacGuffin or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's got enough meat on that bone. But if you throw in like an extra, like, you know, and by the way, it's actually 1722. Now you've kind of watered it down.
We'll jump the shark almost too.
Yeah, you would. That's the curse of, and this is something you and I have talked to authors about before, is like, especially new authors, the tendency to want to put all the ideas in the book. You know,
I did that.
I have all these ideas.
So want to be a writer. And I was like, well, all the good ideas I ever have, I better just cram them into this one book. So I'm not going to write another book.
Cause I'm never going to write again. Right.
Yeah. And thankfully they didn't all fit. So I had a second idea, you know, a third idea and all that, and they became the next books. But yeah, I did that. I thought that was, again, I'm going to talk about Atlantis. We're going to fix Easter Island. We're going to understand where the heads came from. We're going to understand what the treasury at Jordan is. like all of those, I was like solving all these problems. Right. And I was like, it's all it's perfect. It's all here.
Yeah.
And it got a little shark jumpy toward the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's first time authors in particular that, you know, that happens. But yeah. So this would be a good story. This is a James Rollins level plot to me, or plot element to me. So
I have some ideas for it. I might
do too, actually.
A little bit. We should do it.
Well, we've discussed this before. You talked about this in the episode with the Angel Glow Civil War wounds that me and you and Ernest Dempsey, we effectively write about the same topics, but we each give them a unique spin. So there's absolutely no reason that other authors couldn't take this idea and do their thing. Just don't take the specific ideas that we've mentioned here. Because
even then, man, it's going to be a different book, I think. There's something really cool about that to me. And that's why I think we're doing this show. In my mind, anyway, one of the main reasons is I'm not afraid of ideas. I'm not afraid of people stealing them or even just giving them away openly and saying, hey, here's an idea. Go run with it. Because I like to read these kind of books. So who am I to say no one else can have that idea? I'm never going to get around to writing the book, right? It's going to have to be co-written with someone, you know, if I ever do it, because I just don't have time. So I'm like, hey, go write this book. If you're an author out there and you want to take a spin at, you know, take a crack at spinning this thing up into a story, I'd love to read that. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
And there's no way it would be like a book that is based on the exact same idea. There's no way, you know, I mean, sure. It'd be like,
even okay, if you took the exact elements that we discussed here and ran with it to go write your own version of that story, ultimately it would still be a very different tale than what I'd write or what Nick would write,
right,
or maybe even what Ernie would write, but
maybe
that's not a guarantee.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool, man. This is good. This is some good stuff. I'm excited to try to cram the Phantom Time Hypothesis with the bullet ants and see if I see how high I can jump over that shark in my upcoming book.
This is the first episode we're recording in the new year, a year of our Lord 1722. I think this is a good way to start. Can you imagine
how forward thinking we would be, though, if we started broadcasting and advertising that we were actually recording this from 1722 without explaining the Phantom Time Hypothesis?
Right.
We would be famous, man. We'd be like, these guys figured out how to podcast in 1722.
Yeah. Yeah.
Video and everything. Anyway, well, we probably should wrap it up before we go off on more tangents here. But that's what we're here for. If you like tangents and you like thriller ideas and you like, of course, our beautiful mugs, then you're in the right place, because this is stuff that's real. It's also cool, but you didn't know it was real.
No, you got it backwards.
No particular order. No particular order.
Particular order.
But anyway, well, thanks for being with us this week. We will certainly be back at it next week with another episode of Stuff That's Real That You Didn't Know Was Real But Also Is Cool podcast by Nick Thacker and Kevin Tomlinson. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you next week.
Take care.